नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this morning we continue our reading of Srimad Bhagavatam and we're in Canto 4, Chapter 30, The Activities of the Prachetas. Maitreya Uvacha. Prachetasontar Udadho. Piturādeśa Kārina. Japayagyena tapasa Puranjanam matoshayan Maitreya uvacha. Maitreya said, Prachetasa, of the Prachetas, Antaha, within, Udadho, the sea. The sea. Yeah. Sorry. Pitu of their father. Adeshakarina. The order carriers. Japayagyena. By chanting mantras. Tapasa. Under severe austerities. Puranjanam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Atoshayan. Satisfied. Translation. The great sage Maitreya said, the son of King Prachinabarhi, known as the Prachetas, underwent severe austerities within the sea water to carry out the order of their father. By chanting and repeating the mantras given by Lord Shiva, they were able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. One can offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, but if one repeats the prayers offered by great devotees like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, or if one follows in the footsteps of great personalities, one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. For instance, we sometimes chant this mantra of Brahma Samhita. Chintamani prakara sadma sukalpa vriksha lakshavriteshu surabhira bipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasam ramasevyamanam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, the first progenitor, who's tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He's always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis, or gopis. Because this prayer was offered by Lord Brahma, we follow him by reciting this prayer. That is the easiest way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The pure devotee never attempts to reach the Supreme Lord directly. The most important way to worship the Lord is to go through the disciplic succession of devotees. The prayers offered by Lord Shiva to the Supreme Personality of Godhead were thus repeated by the Prachetas, who were thus very successful in pleasing the Supreme Lord. Here the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described as Puranjana. We've come at the end of a long section where Narada Muni was teaching the king about Puranjana, where Puranjana meant us, meant the living entity. But Prabhupada will explain that here it means something else primarily. Here the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described as Puranjana. According to Madhvacharya, the living entity is called Puranjana because he has become an inhabitant of this material world. and under the influence of the three modes of material nature, he is forced to live within it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead creates this material world, the Pura, literally the city, and he also enters within it. Andantarasta paramanu charyantarastam. The Lord enters within the heart of the living entity and within the atom. Therefore, both the living entity and the Lord are called Puranjana. One Puranjana, the living entity, is subordinate to the Supreme Puranjana. Therefore, the duty of the subordinate Puranjana is to satisfy the Supreme Puranjana. That is devotional service. Lord Rudra, or Lord Shiva, is the original Acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya called the Rudra Sampradaya. Rudra Gitena, which is a word from the first verse of the chapter. Rudra Gitena, by the song of Rudra, indicates that under the disciplic succession of Lord Rudra, the Prachetas achieved spiritual success. Maitreya Uvacha, Pracheta Sontarudadho Pitur Ade Shakarina Japa Yagyena Tapasa Puranjanam Atoshayan. The great sage Maitreya said, the sons of King Prachina Barhi, known as the Prachetas, underwent severe austerities within the sea water to carry out the order of their father. By chanting and repeating the mantras given by Lord Shiva, they were able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanepyo Vaishnavepyo Namo Namaha. We're returning in this chapter to something that Maitreya had been talking about a long, long time ago, at least here in Radhadesh. If you remember from those of you that were here, or from your own reading of the Bhagavatam, we've just gone through a lengthy teaching of Narada to King Prachina Barhi. But before Maitreya started talking about the king, he said something about his sons. And his sons, they went away to practice austerities. And while they were leaving the capital, the court, and going to do their spiritual practice, they came to a lake, a very beautiful lake. And at that lake, they met Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva instructed them, and he said, I know what you've come to do. You've come to fulfill the order of your father, and your father wants you to become prajapatis, to generate austerity within you, to generate tapas within you, so you have the power to create praja, to create offspring, to create other living entities. And he says, I have a good mantra with which you should worship the Lord, and which will, by which you can please the Lord. And then we had the whole, the song of Rudra, as Prabhupada refers to in the Anti, the Rudra Gita, the song of Rudra. And he teaches them this song, and then the story sort of jumps. Then Maitreya says, and at the same time, Narada came to the capital and visited their father. And so now, having given the whole account of Narada's teachings to King Prachina Varhi, Vidura asked him. He said, "Well, what really happened to those sons? You talked about that they received his mantra, they received his song from Shiva, but what did they obtain by that? What happened to them? I want to know." So here we're getting back into this, and. In the purport to this verse, Prabhupada touches on something that is very dear to him, something that he emphasizes many, many times in his books, in his lectures, in personal conversations. It is something that he considers very essential in spiritual life, something we really have to understand properly and apply properly in order to for Prabhupada, it's not just that if we do this properly, we will live, we will be successful in spiritual life, but that without this, we have no spiritual life. And that is the issue of parampara, the issue of succession, if you want. Parampara just means one after the other. And Prabhupada highlights this in this verse, in the context here. The prachetas, they chant the prayer of Shiva. It's the prayer they've received from Shiva. And Prabhupada says, yes, they could have prayed on their own. They could have made up their own prayer. There's nothing wrong with that. They could have just composed a prayer and offered that to the Lord, and they could have attained perfection too. He says, but the important thing here is that they did not do that, is that they took the song of Lord Shiva, they took the song of Rudra, and they chanted that. And they did this with the intention that if we chant this prayer that Lord Shiva gave us, we will be able to please the Lord very easily. Prabhupada starts, he says, one can offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, but if one repeats the prayers offered by great devotees like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, or if one follows in the footsteps of great personalities, one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. We hear, if we go back a little in the Bhagavata, we hear that the prayer is not Lord Shiva's prayer itself, although it's called Shiva's song. Shiva himself, he explains in a few chapters earlier, he says, this prayer was first spoken to us by Lord Brahma, the master of all creators. The creators, headed by Bhrigu, the Prajapatis, were instructed in these prayers because they wanted to create. The prayer comes from Lord Shiva, also in Parampara. He received it from his father, and this is not the first time this prayer will be chanted. The Prachetas come in a line of people who've been praying with this prayer, who've been trying to please the Lord with this prayer. The other Prajapatis have done this before, and so they come in this line. And this may seem sort of something that's not terribly significant, or something that we know, we sort of take for granted because we've heard it so many times, and it's. But Prabhupada stresses here. He says, "Where does he say?" He says, "The most important way, to worship the Lord is to go through the disciplic succession of devotees," It's something that perhaps in the modern world is not so popular. The idea of tradition is not something that a lot of people value deeply. Tradition, particularly when it comes to religious tradition, it is not something a lot of people like these days. People might say, well, why can't you think for yourself? Why do you have to repeat what others have said? What is your opinion? I don't want to know what the opinion of your teachers are, but I want to know your opinion. So learn to think for yourself. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his famous essay, the Bhagavata, it's ethics, it's religion, it's philosophy, or something like that, he addresses this issue, and he says, this is the shallow critic. This is a very shallow person thinking. He says, the shallow critic, he thinks, let's begin anew. The old masonry no longer answers the problems today. So let's start again. Let's start from scratch. Everything that came before is sort of irrelevant for the problems we face today. He says, no, this is not real. This is not very good, even in a materialistic sense, even within that worldview, because he says you don't create any progress. Every generation has to start from scratch. And so we don't see it that way. We don't see it that submitting to a tradition, submitting to a higher authority is something that is unpleasant or that sort of stifles our thought, that makes us narrow-minded. But we gladly submit to it. We see personalities that are vastly superior to our own, and we recognize that, yes, these people have understood the issues of life much more deeply than I ever could, and have developed their understanding of this and the implications of that understanding in a way that I could never do on my own. So yes, I gladly submit myself before them. But still, even if you accept tradition, there's still a danger that can come. And it's a danger that we have to sort of be aware of ourselves. This can easily become very legalistic. We can make the system a very sort of legal system and emphasize correct lineage and pedigree in the sense that where the only thing that matters is that you belong to a particular tradition. And you might sort of take up, you might sort of become initiated become part of a tradition merely for the respect that comes with a tradition. And you might take initiation not for spiritual reasons, but to say, I have a guru, I belong to this lineage, I am important. And it's something that does surface in the community of Vaishnavas from time to time. And indeed, if you look at the history of religions in general, you see this popping up quite regularly. It's a very tricky issue, and sometimes our language does not help really. Prabhupada used sometimes legal language. It's a bona fide spiritual master. It's a very legal term. Bona fide means, it's from the Latin, it means in good faith. And it's used to refer to something that is legal, that is not intending to deceive, that is right, and so on. And so sometimes we might fail to see beyond the legalistic terminology that Prabhupada sometimes used, and really fail to grasp the essence of what this lineage of people is really about. And we see this when it becomes a legalistic system. It tends to go to kind of the bad direction. It doesn't go, as it says here, to puranjana matosheyam, to the satisfaction of the Lord, but it goes to the satisfaction of those who are in power. The system becomes used for control, for gaining power and pleasure, for abuse, and you see this in the history of religions. Kripa Mahaprabhu once said that religions divide on three things, that you see schisms happening on three things. One is scripture, the interpretation of scripture. One is liturgy, the manner in which you worship. If you make a change there, you'll see a schism quite likely to develop. But the third one is succession, the succession of the lineage. This is a very contentious issue, and you see, schisms develop because of that in Hindu traditions, in Christianity, in Islam, all over the all across the spectrum. But Prabhupada emphasizes every time when he talks about parampara, he says that it has to be a transparent medium. It has to be a channel, a chain of people that have become transparent, where their own issues, their own personality allows the tradition to shine through them. And so there's no chance of politics developing in that, because their own interests are non-different from the tradition's interest. And there's a verse from at the very end of the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice verse that I particularly like. Kasma yena vibhasito yamatula jnana pradipa pura tadrupena chanaradaya munaye krishnaya tadrupina yogindraya tadatmanata bhagavat rataya karunyata tachuddham Vimalam Vishokam Amritam Satyam Param Dhimahi. And it's sort of, the verse is referring back to the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the Satyam Param Dhimahi, and gives you a clue of how you have to receive this teaching of the Bhagavata, and how this teaching was received, and how it should go on. And so it says that a long time ago, there was Brahma, and, well, actually, we have to start with the last line. Tat shuddham vimalam vishokam amritam satyam param dhimahi. That let us meditate. Let us meditate on the satyam param, the highest truth, the absolute truth, which is shuddham, which is pure, which is vimalam, which has no defects. It's like a crystal. Which is vishokam, which has no sorrow. And which is amritam, which is eternal. And the verse says that this, let us meditate on this absolute truth, which a long time ago imparted this teaching to Brahma, and through the form of Brahma imparted it to Narada, and through the form of Narada imparted it to Vyasa, and through the form of Vyasa imparted it to Shukadev Goswami. And it's a very nice meditation because it gives you what the parampara really is about. That it's not just a lineage of people, it's not just a succession of teachers like we might have a succession. In the academic world, for example, you have a succession of teachers. You have famous scholars in the past who have disciples, and then they have disciples, and they have disciples. But this is not a lineage like this. This is a lineage where the Lord himself instructs through these people. The verse says that he instructed Brahma, and through the form of Brahma, the absolute truth taught Narada. And so the Lord is active within these personalities and instructs. He's the one doing the teaching, in a sense. And why are they able to do this? And we get the sense in the last line. It says, Tat shuddham vimalam, that the Lord is said to be pure and spotless like a crystal. And it's these personalities where he manifests in, they've become spotless themselves too. They've become transparent, as Prabhupada would say. Krishna, the Satyam Param, actually, it's said to be the Kasma Yena Vibhasito Yamatula Jnana Pradipa, the light of knowledge that is Krishna, that he gives, is able to shine through these people because they're spotless. There's no spots that on them. If you have a window and there's you know, you throw a snowball against the window, so there'll be spots on it. You'll have some snow on it, and so when the light comes through, when the sun starts to shine, the light doesn't come through fully. You'll see the sort of the shadows on the floor. You'll see the stains on the window there, and so the light is distorted. What to speak of if you have a colored glass, if you have a red glass or a glass that has a texture in it. The light cannot come through. Here, the Bhagavata stresses that with the parampara, this is not the case. These personalities have to be spotless. These personalities are spotless. And therefore, the light can shine through without any distortion, without any change. And Prabhupada sometimes makes it seem very easy how parampara works. He says, well, you just repeat what you've heard from your spiritual master. There's nothing complicated about that. But if we look even at the history of our own movement, we see it is very complicated. It is very difficult to just repeat what you've heard. It requires a great self-control, a great submission to higher authority, a great selflessness, that we have a tendency to add something, to change something, to distort something, either to please ourselves, where we think, actually, I don't quite like this teaching, this doesn't sit very right with me, so I'm going to change this, I'm going to give a little twist to this so that it actually, you know, suits me better. Or one might also consider others. One might say, well, I'm going to change something because this person is not going to understand this otherwise. And I have to please this person. I have to make this person interested. So I'm going to change this a little bit here. Or perhaps in some cases you might say, well, if I change this here, or if I don't teach this, or if I distort this teaching in a particular way, maybe they'll give money. Maybe they'll sustain me. Maybe they'll like me and they'll give me something. And they're very deep-rooted desires. We've been talking, Maharaj was talking about on Sunday about the creeper of bhakti that grows, and there's weeds that come up. And what are the weeds that come up, that grow up? They're the things that distort us. They're the desires that come up in our heart as we water the seed of devotion, that will cause us to distort these things. And so we should be very careful about this. And we should realize that this parampara is really not an easy thing. In theory, it is easy. You just repeat what you've heard from your spiritual master. But in practice, we see it's very, very difficult, and very few people can actually genuinely preserve the teaching without throwing themselves into it and without changing the teaching for whatever reason. Now, this is not to say that because these personalities have become transparent, that they become irrelevant or that they don't matter that much. It is not that Prabhupada says that we have this parampara and there's a transparent medium, which means that he says at the end of the Gita that the experience is still direct. Sanjaya, he was able to see the Lord talking to Arjuna and see the Vishvarupa by the grace of his spiritual master, by the grace of Vyasa. And so it comes through Vyasa, but Prabhupada says the experience was direct. He could see Krishna directly. And so you might say, well, then Vyasa is kind of not so important. But that's not the case. It's the fact that some persons can be like that and can be transparent is a great source of joy for us, should be a great source of joy for us and of celebration. And therefore we find in our scriptures there's an emphasis given again and again to, you don't just worship the Lord, you don't just have bhakti for the Lord. Yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru, that you should have devotion for the Lord, the Shvetashvata Upanishad says. You should have bhakti for para bhakti, and the highest bhakti, a full self-surrender for the Lord and a full commitment to the worship of the Lord. But then it says, yatha deve, as for God, tatha guru, so for the guru. And so these people are spotless, and they're in a sense unnoticeable almost. The experience is direct, but the Bhagavata, the Upanishads, the Gita repeatedly tell us that no, they are important, and your devotion is not just directed to the Lord, but to them as well. And we see this in this instance as well. The Prachetas, they worship Lord Shiva. By chanting his prayer. His prayer is a prayer to the Lord, but by doing this, they emphasize that, yes, Shiva is very important to us. We've received this from him, and we will chant this prayer with deep gratitude, with loyalty to Shiva. And by doing this, we are convinced that by doing this, we can please the Lord. Because Shiva is dear to the Lord, and because we will chant his prayer, therefore we will become dear to the Lord. So, although the medium is transparent, still we're grateful for that transparency. We're grateful for that window which lets through the light. This does also not mean that there's sometimes people are against tradition because they say it stagnates, it prevents the teaching from growing, from developing. But we see that's really not the case. We see that just like Lord Shiva, or Lord Brahma, you could say, where the prayer ultimately goes back to, he adds something to tradition. He adds his own prayers to tradition. And the Prachetas recognize this, and therefore they'll chant his prayer. And we recognize this, therefore we chant the prayers. You have Narottam Das Thakur, who recognizes the importance of Sri Jiva Goswami and Srila Rupa Goswami, and values their prayers. But at the same time, he composes his own prayers to express his gratitude and to link with the Lord through them. And we sing his prayers too. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes along And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again, with deep gratitude to everyone who comes before him, composes his own prayers. And so we sing those prayers. And if you start looking at Parampara like that, you get a very different sense. You get a very different view of Parampara. It's not just a legalistic system. It's not just a lineage of people. But it's a lineage of people who have given to their students, to their disciples, the thing that is most valuable to them, the thing that shapes their personality the most in the most profound way, the thing that is most intimate to them. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gives what really shapes his whole identity, what shapes his entire life. He gives that to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and they take this, and this becomes their most valuable thing, and the thing that's closest to their hearts. And they give this to Sri Jiva Goswami. And in this way, it goes through the parampara. And so you get a lineage, not just of teachers, but of teachers who are very intimately connected with each other, and who really give their heart. Who don't just give teachings, but who give their heart. And by doing that, they keep tradition alive. The tradition, if the tradition becomes a legalistic system, where it's just about, I'm a disciple of such and such, therefore I have such authority, the tradition dies. If the tradition is a lineage of people, if the tradition is a lineage of people who give what is most dear to them and receive what is most dear to their teacher and make that the core of their life, the tradition becomes alive and flourishes and thrives, and it will express itself in so many ways. Prabhupada compares it to a tree that if it's properly nourished, it grows, and it's a banyan tree. And sometimes he says the root goes back to the earth and a new tree arises. And he says the Krishna consciousness movement is like that. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he compares it to the Lord Chaitanya is tree of devotion, has sprouted and has taken root in the West, and is now flourishing in the West and is growing and expanding. this issue of parampara was very important for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, if you can sort of see him, and those of you who are fortunate to meet Prabhupada will probably confirm this. But if you look at Prabhupada, Prabhupada was always thinking not about what's happening now, but about the future. Prabhupada was very concerned about the future of his movement and what would happen after he passed away and he was no longer present to guide them. And he tried repeatedly to get the devotees to be able to run the society on their own, even in his presence, which never really worked. But this was a strong desire for him. And we see that Prabhupada often emphasized that the parampara continues. The parampara goes on after me. And in several lectures, he would address his audience and say, you're next, basically. You have to become part of this parampara. And he meant not just by becoming initiated, but by really perpetuating the tradition. And it's something that's a little tricky to think about. And you can sort of approach that and say, ha, I will become guru. Ha ha, look at me. Really what Prabhupada wanted was we have to become disciples. And we have to become, we have to be able to receive these teachings fully within our hearts. We have to become, in order to do that, we have to become spotless like Brahma and Narada and Vyasa and Shuka. We have to become spotless so these teachings are transmitted within us without distortion. And that's not an easy thing. And that should be the focus of our meditation, that we have to become proper disciples. Which means we really have to submit. We really have to seek shelter with our spiritual masters, with the parampara. We have to really give ourselves to that. And we have to become selfless. Our own interests, our own desires, our own motivations have to be pushed aside. and the teachings themselves that have been passed down become the center of our life. This is really what parampara is all about. In the Gita, Krishna says, how does the parampara work? He says, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanas jnaninas tattvadarshina. That this knowledge, you can receive this if you approach a spiritual master. And it's not just approaching a spiritual master, but it's a pranipata. You fully surrender yourself to them. And surrender means there's an acknowledgement that my own interests are irrelevant when it comes to your interests. You see the spiritual master as one of those transparent mediums through which Krishna works, and you submit yourself to a higher authority. In the words of Alfred Lord Tennyson, our will is ours to make them thine. That we have a will, but our will is there to make it yours. That's what it means, pranipata. And then you do pariprasnena. You ask questions. You inquire. Why do you ask questions? So you really know you understand the teachings. You really make sure that what you have understood. If there's doubts in your mind, you raise them, and you have to come to an understanding that now I really get this. Now I really see the teachings. There's no more doubts in me. Everything is clear. And sevaya, by service. You serve them. That's the devotion I was talking about earlier. Yata deve tata guru. You serve the guru as if he were God. You have a devotion to the guru as you have a devotion to God. Which means that what Krishna is saying here is that it's not enough to read books. Some people, even in our own movement, like this notion that it's enough to just read Prabhupada's books, and everything is in Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada himself and Krishna himself say, well, that's not the case. It's not enough to read Prabhupada's books. It's not enough to just receive teachings through a book. Sampradaya vihinaste mantraste nishpalamata. That without the sampradaya, without the connection to the sampradaya, the mantras that you might chant are nishpala, are fruitless, give no results. And you find Vaishnava authors who elaborate on this idea, and they say that if you've received a mantra by reading a palm leaf, by reading a book, basically, it says it won't work. It really won't work. If you receive a mantra if you hide behind a wall and hear the instructions of a guru to his disciple and sort of try and catch them like that, and you've heard them from the mouth of the guru, says it won't work. That's not how it works. Unless there is a full submission to the guru and service to the guru, it's the mantra becomes useless. The mantra has no effect. The mantra cannot be planted in your heart unless you have sort of eradicated your own desires and you've eradicated your own self in the presence of the guru. If you take that into consideration, to continue parampara becomes a bit more difficult, and you start to realize that, well, I might be initiated, but have I really received the mantra in parampara? And I don't mean to say that is my initiation sort of valid, but more, how have I received this? Was the land in which the seed has been planted fertile enough, or do I need to continue to cultivate the land and try and really get the plant to take root? Just the other day, I was reading Vedanta Deshika, who's one of the great Sri Vaishnava teachers, and he happened to be talking about this topic, and he says, unless the mantra is received through service by the guru, from the guru, he says it's like a plant that's a parasitic, that just derives its power from elsewhere, and that has no real roots, and it means it just feeds off onto something else and it'll die shortly after that. And so it will not lead to anywhere. He said it's like somebody who's stolen a jewel Mantras are often compared to jewels in Sanskrit texts. It says, if you've received your mantra by eavesdropping, by standing behind a wall when the guru was teaching on the other side, or by reading a book, he says, it's like you've stolen a jewel. And he says, you become like a person who's stolen a jewel and who's afraid somebody might see that you have this jewel. If you really value the mantras, you'll go through the proper channels to receive the mantra. Because the mantra and the channel are inseparably connected. They go together. This is what Parampara is all about. This is what the system that we value. This is the system that we say when we're Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Vaishnavas. This is what we refer to. We don't just mean we have a name. We have a place in the world of religions. But we say we have a beautiful lineage of teachers through which these beautiful teachings have come down. And just to end, I thought to end with a favorite prayer of mine in the spirit of the verse, to recite a prayer by a great Vaishnava from the past. And this is a verse you'll find in the Mukunda Mala that's the BBT printed or translated and Satsarup Maharaj commented on, where Kulashekara is praying to the Lord. He says, Madjanmana phalamidam madukaita bhare madprartaniya madanugraha evsha eva tvad britya britya paricharaka britya britya brityasya britya iti mam smara lokanata. He says, O Lokanata, O Lord, smara, remember me. If you think of me, remember me in this way. And he says, madjanmana phalamidam, the fruit of my life, the success of my life, what I consider the fruition of my life, the best thing I can attain in my life. Matprartaniya madanugraha esha eva, the only thing that you can give me out of compassion, out of grace, the only thing I really desire is that you make me tvad britya britya paricharaka britya britya brityasya britya. He says that I become a britya, a servant of the 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 servant. Don't know how many there were. There should be 7. And britya, the word he uses is very significant. Britya means one who is to be maintained. It's one who is to be, brit means to bear, one who is to be born in the sense of supported, maintained. So he says, if when you remember me, O Lord, when you think of me, think of this. This is really what I want. I don't want anything else. This is the highest thing I want, that I may become a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, and so on, of you. That is my desire, and that is my perfection. I like your devotees. I love your devotees. And I don't think I myself... of course, it's a Sri Vaishnav text, so there's the mood that I really don't think I myself am qualified to serve you directly. It's the mood of Kulashekara throughout the Mukunda Mala. But I can serve your devotees, of your devotees, of your devotees, of your devotees. So please give me that, and that will be the perfection of my life. So I'll end here. Any questions or comments? Kanchanavali Mataji said that, sometimes new things do arise in the world, and we see people respond to that in parampara, And so there's an issue of interpretation there, how to interpret the teachings in a particular time. Does that sort of adequately? It's a good question. Well, one thing I would say, sometimes we think there's a lot of new things in our world, in our present time, that really are not so new. That's one thing. And I don't want to go to the line of sort of there's nothing new under the sun, absolutely speaking. But a lot of the issues we deal with nowadays are issues that, that people dealt with in the past too. And we just tend to forget that. We tend to sort of ignore that. We tend to think that our time is really special. But it's like, if you read history, you see that a lot of the issues we deal with nowadays are issues that people have dealt with again and again and again and again. But that said, there are some new things. There are some things that come up that might be new. But in order to be able to deal with those, it's yes, there is an issue of interpretation involved, that how do you apply the teachings in that case? But you can only do that faithfully if you really know the teachings. And it requires a very deep understanding of the teachings. You know, if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you'll generally hear more or less the same thing he's saying. Prabhupada, you know, returns to the same points again and again, no matter which verse of the Bhagavatam or the Gita he's lecturing on. It's always the same things he says. And it's a concern, and it's actually, to go back to Vedanta Deshika, he said that he praises the guru of his guru. He says he was like a parrot. He memorized the teachings of his guru and could repeat them like a parrot. And it's something we kind of, you know, we often say, well, you shouldn't be like a parrot, you know, because it just means you repeat, but you don't understand. But there's a certain sense in which by constantly repeating these teachings, you really get to know them. You really become intimately familiar with them. By doing that, once you really know the teachings and you've heard them again and again and again and again and again and again and again, then you'll be able to look at things and say, okay, here the teachings apply in this way. Because the teachings have permeated your entire understanding, permeated your entire worldview. It's everywhere you look, you see the teachings of your guru basically manifested in this world in some form or another. Then you can really interpret. I think sometimes we might be a little too eager to interpret and say, oh, this is how we're going to do it here, without really having digested the teachings. It's a tricky issue. It's an issue that requires balance. We can only do it when we've really digested the teachings. We see it with Prabhupada. Prabhupada really digested the Bhagavatam. He really, the Bhagavatam permeated his entire being. He was the Bhagavatam, really. Because he's so filled with the Bhagavatam, he could look at contemporary issues and give a perspective on it that's fully in line with the teachings. There is an issue of interpretation involved, but that interpretation should happen with fidelity to the tradition, with the understanding of the previous acharyas. I don't know if that. I suppose it depends on the issue too. There are differences of opinion. Some of the differences might arise because one person just happens to have imbibed the tradition deeper than the other. That might very well be the case. Sometimes it's some areas are sort of depend on personal interpretation, as you mentioned earlier, and personal application. But yeah, so I mean, it's hard to comment on that in a general way, because it really depends on the situation. Rasmus, approve. Yeah. I mean, the absolute truth is not a static thing, and so there are different, and we can never fully capture the absolute in our tiny minds, and so there are different perspectives. There are, you know, even in the Bhagavatam we see different devotees relate differently to the Lord. It's like Rasamanda Prabhu said, that it's they're all devotees, they're all firmly sort of rooted in their own spiritual practice, in their own spiritual understanding. There's a saying, too many cooks spoil the dish, which you could apply in this case. And there's a reason there's a reason the Kanishtadhikari only sees his guru and no one else. And we often use it as sort of to put them down and say, oh, look, they're Kanishtas, they only see the guru and no one else. But it's a very important stage because it protects them. It allows them to receive teachings and see and to sort of their devotion and their understanding of Krishna is very fragile. And by basically blocking everyone out and just saying there's my guru and there's me, they allow this to grow. They protect it. And they allow this to grow. The bad thing is that if you stay in that situation for too long, then you don't grow. If a man doesn't grow, he becomes a dwarf or a midget? A midget. He becomes a midget. And it's you're not fully grown if you remain a child all your life. But to be a child, there's nothing wrong with being a child. So Kanishtadhikari is like a child. And it protects him to really start for his roots of the creeper of devotion to take root by saying, okay, here's my guru, and what these guys are saying there, I don't care about them because they're not my guru. Of course, this has to develop in an understanding where you see, well, here's my guru, and these are the teachings I've received from my guru. And I see these teachings reflected in these and these persons too, so therefore these persons are my gurus as well. And so you have more than one guru. Prabhupada said the guru is one because there's only one message. And so you have to come to this understanding. But initially, it's not bad to have a qualified person guide you and leave it at that. Yes and no. Favorite answer of the academic. It's not lost what the person is doing, but it also depends on the individual again. But there is something different. That if you receive it from a person, It creates a bigger impression on you. It creates a more lasting bond. It creates, you know, when there's humility there, and you see it through that, in interaction with another person, you will. I mean, it's in theory you could say, well, no, but we see our you know, Prabhupada and our acharyas stress this so enormously that they're very convinced that there is something very special about that. Now, the general rule is that no, it won't work. The yes part of my answer is that there is another guru that we carry with us everywhere we go, and that is Krishna, who is in the heart. So Krishna, through the heart, might act as a guru if there's no one else around. But there's also the saying that used to be very popular, that when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. It's that is there true, that a person might pick up a book in a second-hand bookstore you know, not have any contact with a person, and the book might change their life, and they might sort of, you know, try and become devotees. But if they're ready, they'll meet someone, and they'll be able to submit themselves before somebody, and up until that point, Krishna guides them through the hearts. But I mean, Krishna says that you'll only know jnana, you'll only really know knowledge if it's accompanied by these three things. Submission, service, questions. So then you'll really have knowledge. And if you read the rest of the chapter, you realize that what Krishna is talking about is not just knowledge you really gain from a book. He says, after that, once you've received the knowledge, there's no more illusion. It's totally gone. And you will never, you know, you will never see me, Krishna, and the living entities as different. You'll always see everyone is connected to Krishna. Everyone has a relationship with Krishna. This is a very profound sort of level of knowledge. It's a knowledge that not just sits in your head, but really sort of has taken root in your heart and shapes everything about your thinking, about the way you look at the world, about the way you act in the world. And Krishna says this happens through here. Through this process. Maharaj? That's a good question, but it's sometimes we place too much emphasis on the qualification of the guru, not enough on the qualification of the disciple. There's a certain emphasis that you find in the Bhagavatam. There are verses we generally don't pay much attention to, or only sort of in a general way. But there are verses that talk about how how the disciple should be. And that's what you should strive to become, because, as you said, you find statements all over the place that say that, you know, you have blind people led by a blind person, and it's because they're blind they cannot recognize somebody who has vision, and so they elect another blind person, say, you're our leader, you know, lead us on, and they walk off and they bump into a pole or whatever. So there is the Bhagavata, and Krishna actually himself, just after this section of the Stadvidi Pranipatena, he says, well, who is eligible to come to this? And he says, Shaddhaval labhate jnanam tatpara samyatendriya. Those are the qualifications. Prabhupada says, Shraddhavan, somebody who is faithful, somebody who has the conviction that the path of Krishna consciousness is worthy of my attention, the path of Krishna consciousness is something that will lead me to perfection, and I have full faith in that. That should be there, Krishna says. Tatpara, he should be devoted to knowledge. He should see the knowledge that he will receive at initiation as that should be his goal. That should be his aspiration. He should place this above himself, literally. And samyatendriya, he should be self-controlled. He should control the senses. So there is a period, you know, where you have to control your senses, basically. You refrain. You no longer led your intelligence and be led by your mind and your mind by your senses, but you start gradually to reduce the reign of the senses. By that you gain control over the mind, and by that you gain more control over the intelligence again. And so you find statements like this where it says, well, this is what you have to be. You have to become a disciple. There's qualifications for a disciple too. It's not just all about the guru, it's about the disciple equally, if not more importantly, because as you mentioned, otherwise you might not recognize it. That said, there are qualifications given for a guru too. And if you look at Rupa Goswami, for example, you know, Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Prabhupada in all his writings, the qualifications that they give for a spiritual master are fairly down to earth, actually. It's not that he has visions of Krishna, or he cries rivers of tears, and his body is constantly trembling with love of God. But there, you know, Rupa Goswami, he talks about somebody who's very spiritual advanced. He says, well, he's not attached to anything material. He doesn't waste his time. Everything he does is used in the service of Krishna. And you get all these very down-to-earth qualifications that are given. And that's how you can see. You can see someone, here's somebody fully devoted to the spiritual path, not attached to this, to the enjoyment of this world, not interested in power, not interested in pleasure, doesn't waste any time, and so on. So there are things you can judge a spiritual an advanced person by. If you start thinking that, oh well, do they, it's interesting that Prabhupada doesn't talk about the fact that you have to meditate on your swarupa in your heart, and how you serve Krishna in the spiritual world. Rupa Goswami doesn't mention any of these things. It's the symptoms or the external ways by which you can judge someone. They're all very down to earth. So that's something to take into consideration as well. I think it's time to end now. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Okay. No, thank you for that. Thank you very much. Very good.
By example, actually the Prabhupada is called Acharya. It's also a very high title, you know, Acharya, the perfect teacher. You know, he's like the epiphany of exemplary behavior, you know, it's like the guy everybody should be looking at and following. Everything he does should be followed.
Please come to the meeting. Especially Saturday and Sunday.
Especially Sunday. Because then it's Rasa Mando. Maybe you've heard part of the... Did she come to this club? I'm not sure, I don't think so. But he's initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and for me it's always a special... They're so... realized, these people, you know. And they're so, like, for them, Krishna consciousness is like natural. It's not like I have to force myself. For them, it's like. It's very nice. Yeah, so at least Sunday should come, and then maybe also Saturday, because Saturday, Yadananda Swami gives class. So that's also very nice. And tomorrow it's Parthasarathi, if you can stand it. Oh my God, what's going on? Never stopped it.